I think especially better for the world is when you have something bigger than yourself, because you know that your impact can create waves and it can be positive or negative, so it's essentially your choice, but you have the opportunity as this powerful, connected human to make an impact and do good and bring light to others who maybe don't have an opportunity or network or don't even see things like that. And I would say that's what sticks out in my mind first.
Welcome to the Brands for a Better World podcast, the podcast that brings you the stories behind people and products building a more just, healthy, and regenerative future for us all. Tune in weekly, and together, we'll learn why these better products and brands were created, how they're helping fix broken systems, and what you can do to support them. My hope is that you'll discover some new brands to love and get some sparks of inspiration that will help you live your best life. Hi, I'm your host, Gage Mitchell, founder of Modern Species, a sustainable brand design agency helping better brands grow to scale their impact. This podcast is one way we do that. If you like the show, please help it grow by leaving ratings and reviews on your podcast app and by sharing your favorite episodes with your friends. Maybe this will be one of them. On this episode, I'm speaking with Kat Weaver, CEO of Power to Pitch, about why getting good at pitching is important for founders, the formula for a great pitch, common mistakes Kat sees people make, and how she helps people win more pitches to raise more money. And finally, we wrap up with a rapid round question segment. Enjoy.
So my name is Kat Weaver, and I'm the founder of Power to Pitch. I like to say I'm a two-time accidental founder. So I started a company in college, no network or know-how, and was able to win 22 of 23 pitches to help scale that company. It allowed me then to do Amazon and retail and Good Morning America, all the fun and hard CPG startup things. And I was able to sell and exit that company after 6 years. And I did that because I realized I met so many amazing founders who struggle to talk about themselves, what they do and what they need. So I then founded what is now Power to Pitch with the whole mission of helping founders get funded faster. So we help mostly early stage, pre-seed and seed stage founders with their pitch, fundraising materials, and we'll directly connect them with investors in their industry.
Love it. And I love that you're doing this because I think pitching is such a powerful skill to practice or to hone as an entrepreneur. And most entrepreneurs, when they start building their business, they've maybe never pitched anything in their life outside of maybe a college public speaking course or something like that. So there's definitely some best practices and skill sets and a level of comfort you have to have, but it's not just about being up there on stage and being charismatic. You also have to communicate the right things in a short amount of time so that people are interested to learn more or ready to make a decision after that. So there's kind of a art and a science to it, right? So if you don't know what you're doing, it's hard to jump in and just instantly get it. So I'm excited to dig into it more.
Yeah. And I was going to add that the pitching aspect, it's not just, oh, if you want to raise money, it's for securing retail partnerships or grants or a loan or a strategic partner or even a new customer. Pitch skills are something that should be practiced all the time and are constantly evolving because it is crucial to so many facets of the business.
Right. Or even just if you're getting some great press and get asked to do an interview on the news or go on a podcast like this or whatever, like if you get really good at the pitching, then you're also going to be really good at your quote unquote elevator pitch that everyone says you should have of quickly and easily explaining what you do and making it compelling to that audience. So it's a powerful tool everywhere. I would even argue as a brand person that if you get really good at your pitch, you'll also be better at defining your brand and carving out like what your brand stands for and what you will and won't do, because you've had to think through some of that stuff to make a really compelling pitch too. So how about let's start at the beginning for people who are newer to pitching. What do you feel like are some of the ideal recipes or formulas for a great pitch?
I would say the number one thing is figuring out who the audience is. So even for founders raising millions of dollars, my partner in Power to Pitch, she's an active angel investor in over 19 companies, and she will still say to the founders, talk to me like I'm 5 years old. So in understanding your audience, you might think that you want to show up with this level of expertise to impress them, but you may actually be excluding them from the conversation. So you're better off keeping things very on a more educational level. And then someone can always be invited in to, or will ask more questions on specifics. But understanding the audience and their level of expertise, position, understanding how much they know or don't know about you or the industry are really, really, really important. And two is not taking practice for granted. So when outlining the things that you want to say, it's so easy to get nervous. My first pitch, I was totally nauseous, had no idea what I was doing. Nerves and adrenaline are totally normal and human. So practicing is going to help get your body to just fall into what you need to do, even when you do get the nerves. So those are the top two portions. And I would say the third is that confidence that you have comes from preparation. So that's a third, because if you're not confident in what you're saying, you can't expect someone else to be. I think energy is really contagious in a pitch. So if you're giving off a level of confidence and energy, it's going to be something that is taken more warmly and is more memorable.
Those are some like nice three pillars there, but I got some follow-up questions. So like when you talk about understanding the audience and you mentioned that even like a seasoned person sometimes will say, explain it to me like I'm a five-year-old. I feel like that's probably a powerful tip across the board, whether you're talking to like PhDs in your subject matter or people who are completely new. If you start with the basics, start explaining it as clearly as possible without a bunch of complicated words, because you never really know if you're using the same language. Even if you do the same thing, people might use different terms than you're used to. So like explaining it without a bunch of jargon, I think is always a good place to start. Yeah, acronyms, jargon, etc. And then theoretically, depending on their knowledge level, you can go deeper later in the pitch, but or when they ask questions as a follow-up. But would you say that's kind of true, that you should just always keep it simple at the start?
Yeah, unless you're specifically asked in a pitch rubric where you have to get more technical or into certain details or answer to certain acronyms, then sure. But it's, you're better off safe than sorry, and someone, it going over someone's head and they don't feel either comfortable asking something or they get confused or misinterpret something. So you're better off literally spelling it out to someone very, very basic and simple. And they'll, it's more important for them to be able to explain what you do to someone else in the room. Because if they're not a target consumer and they don't understand, how easy is it for them to repeat it to someone in a few words or that person who maybe is a potential customer investor to then understand?
Yeah, that makes total sense. And one of the things that just popped in my mind is I had a friend who was saying like he believes in the power of metaphors sometimes to make things simple, right? So like if it is an industry someone's not familiar with, saying like, oh, we're going to be like the Uber for the pet industry, or I don't know, something like that. I'm just making something up there, but like explaining it in some easy to understand terms by like making it memorable and making it easier to understand by using some common metaphor or something else like that, that might make sense. But do you have any other tips beyond like maybe a metaphor for making sure you're explaining it simply and clearly? Because I know for a fact, like sometimes I think I'm being really clear and then I realize I'm not being clear at all to this other person who isn't in my brain and doesn't have the conversations I have on a daily basis. So how do you test? How do you make sure that you're explaining things clearly?
Yeah, so sometimes metaphors, I feel like a lot of founders can get up caught up in the fanciness of trying to have this cool or super billion-dollar idea metaphor, and it ends up hurting them more than helping them. So I guess it really depends. But I would say more than anything, we tell any founder at any stage, no matter if they're pitching a investor for a grant or even for a retailer, you should always lead with your story. The story is something that's proprietary to you. It's memorable. It's unique. And then it gives someone insight into your world, even if they are not a target consumer. I think one of the biggest mistakes that founders make is thinking that an audience member is a target consumer or a potential customer. And that's the majority of time. It's not the case. And that's totally okay. Someone can be an investor, even if they're not a target consumer. So founders need to be able to bring someone into their world. And I think that by telling their story or their involvement or relation to the problem and how it became a solution is going to do more justice than a regular metaphor.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I feel like that ties into Simon Sinek philosophy. I'm pretty sure, I want to say it was a Skillshare, but it might have been something else that I saw, like one of his early classes on how to present. And one of his tips was like, you got to get them to care before you tell them more, right? You got to get them to want to know more and care about what you're pitching to them before you just dump a ton of details on them. So like sometimes people's instinct is to get up and be like, oh, we're going to have 500% year over year, and we're going to do this and we're going to do that. And like, look at the size of the market and all that, all these big numbers and exciting stuff. But then somebody will, you know, stop them and be like, but wait, why are you doing this? Like, what, who even cares about this product, right? Like, if you don't get them to start from that standpoint, then they might tune out or fuzz out on all the other details. But once they care, once they're like, oh, you're right, that is a huge problem, because I know 10 people in my social circle that have that same problem. Now they're going to pay closer attention to the details because they're going to be understand why it's relevant.
Yeah, we say, and your audience buys into you before what you do. And actually, I think it was Simon Sinek's Start With Why TED Talk was one of the most watched TED Talks of all times. And that comes to show that it is impactful, and that's, it's definitely a philosophy we like to share with founders.
Yeah, that's really cool. So moving on to like the practice part, that's another great tip that I can speak from experience when I've given presentations. Like if I've practiced it, I can get up there and maybe not even look at any notes or anything and just kind of like riff off of memory and therefore have a little bit more comfort like ad-libbing or like responding to an audience question. Whereas if you haven't practiced and somebody asks a question, it might throw you off. You're like, oh crap, where was I in my notes? What was I supposed to say next? But I know there's lots of different methods for practice. So do you have any favorite methods of practice? Like, do you record yourself on video and watch it later? Do you try to do it in front of an audience, like a Toastmasters class? Do you have a mentor, a coach? Like, what's the best method for that practice?
Actually, all of the above. So when I was doing a lot of the in-person pitches to get money for my first company, I would start by memorizing it in my room by myself. And then when I was comfortable, I would do it in front of a mirror or my computer and actually record myself. And then I would watch the recording. And then when I felt ready, I would do it in front of a few friends, mentors, or advisors, or even share the recording with others to review, because it's not something that can be practiced three times and then you're off. I would tally at least 50 times. No joke. I actually made a tally and did it 50 times. And I mean, that it worked, right? I had to put in the effort, but then the audience felt that I was either the most prepared or, you know, I was going to do the most right by the money. And I had proved that through the way I structured my information or carried myself, because it was something that I repeated and knew the answer to. And then another, I think founders underestimate practicing their answers to potential questions. So yes, the body of your pitch and how you're going to get things out is important. But if you know that you're going to get some of the top five questions, whether it's about your financials or an exit strategy or some of your key partners, and you don't have a concise and clear answer, that is going to completely turn off your audience. And we've seen plenty of founders burned by just messing up the Q&A portion. They had the best pitch, but they clearly were well rehearsed there and didn't have the acumen for some of the tougher questions.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because it could then look like, well, you don't know your business, you can't answer these basic questions. But sometimes those will throw you off guard, right? If you were so hyper-focused on, I need to nail these slides, that you are then like fuzz-brained when somebody asks you like a question about like, well, how did you get this number? Or how'd you base this? What'd you base this calculation off of? Or, you know, just some other kind of thing that picks into the details. If you're not prepared for that as well, then it doesn't matter how good your pitch is. Those are all great tips. So you practice like 50 times with some of your pitches. How much did you change the pitch while you were practicing? Like, were you kind of almost designing it out loud, so to speak, the pitch, where you're kind of trying some stuff out and seeing where it fits and rearranging and trying new ways to say it? Or did you like nail a script or the slide deck?
No, I nailed that just script.
Like, oh, nice.
Oh, no, I knew. I outlined because I was getting a rubric, or I knew I was in front of X audience, or there were certain types of people that I wanted to be able to capture in the room. I planned out exactly how, what, and where I was saying things, because that was going to make or break the situation. In certain opportunities, whether it's Q&A and things too, it's going to be ad-lib. There's only so much you can assume. But for the main body of all of those pitch opportunities, it was extremely calculated.
Wow, that's amazing. So do you feel like that's just your personal skill set, or do you have like a good formula for like, hey, if you follow this formula, your script will be nailed, and then all you have to do is work on delivery?
So that's one of the whole reasons I started Power to Pitch, is we have and order and formula and frameworks and examples of founders who have raised millions of dollars with us.
Nice.
There's not a one size fits all, but it's these are the foundations with what you need to have and need to work on in order to be able to build off of it. And it makes you more confident. It makes your audience and investors more confident in you. So if you need to get these pieces together and be able to answer things in this way, it's led tons of our founders to be successful. So we absolutely built a framework out of it because I wasn't naturally a good pitcher. I didn't naturally have or want to be on stage or in pitching in front of a bunch of people. I had to spend hours, an ungodly amount of hours practicing to improve those skills because that was essentially how I was going to keep the business alive. So it was a matter of being and staying hungry as a gritty startup founder to do all of that. It was definitely not one of my natural skill sets at first.
That's cool. Yeah. And that's why we do this podcast. And I like to promote opportunities like Power to Pitch, because by learning from others who've been there and getting tips, tricks, frameworks to avoid pitfalls or to like get somewhere or to get some tips on how to solve some things you might not have figured out until year three or year five from someone who's further along than you, we can move these businesses forward quicker. We can get more better for the world products out there. We can change more people's lives, make people healthier, you know, make the industry more equitable, et cetera, just by like sharing our knowledge and resources. So I love that you've created this program so that you can help other people maybe skip years of screwing up their pitches before getting it right. You can help them kind of nail it out of the gate. So that's great.
Yeah, we did the hard part for all of them, went through all the struggles. And my business partner spent 25 years in finance, managed over $10 billion in real estate. Is an active angel in 19 companies. So it's like you get that experience and that investor perspective. And I've been through the hard startup founder things from finding manufacturer to securing the money and stuff. So we take it all from personal experiences.
Yeah, that's amazing. So follow-up question on the confidence side. So you said that kind of comes from the practice, but I also know, or at least in theory, there are some tips and tricks for that as well. Like I was just seeing some social media post about, I forget the guy's name, but he kind of teaches people how to present or something. And he was saying that he got a tip from someone early in his career where he said, why don't I ever get a standing ovation? And the person said, well, because you're not asking for one or you're not commanding one. And he showed him some tips of like, you know, after he finishes his speech, he kind of raises a hand of thank you. It's almost like a suggesting you stand up, but then like he'll do a little bow. And then when he comes back up, he raises his hands up in the air again, almost like a stand up kind of command. So there's like, I've heard of things like that. I've heard that, to your point before, like the Simon Sinek tip on like people buy into you before what you do or something like that. I've heard tips of like, if you come out and like smile first thing, or there's obviously body language stuff of not shifting around awkwardly, or what you do with your hands. Like there's so many different things that can tie into confidence, but do you have any like high level tips or things that you think are totally false that don't actually work? Or is that part of your program too?
Well, I think the showiness of Shark Tank is unrealistic for a lot of founders when they want to go pitch investors. It doesn't usually look like that. It's not as gamified and silly. But the two things that we do actually train founders on in our program that equate to some of their successes are through tonality and body language. Those support a level of confidence, because if your tone is low and you're keeping your voice the same as you're pitching and it's not excited or you're not passionate, drawing your voice up, natural energy, emphasizing certain words to create a more memorable tone or lasting impact on that word is something that is going to catch someone's attention at the end of the day, because investors will see thousands of deals a year, thousands, and make investments maybe in 5 to 10 for even some $50+ million funds. So every word counts, because they may be tired. They've already seen or heard a lot of what you're working on. So the little bits of tonality are important. And then in terms of body language, if you are slouched, your shoulders aren't back, you're not standing up straight, you're looking down, you're looking at notes, your eyes are going all over, you're dropping your voice, your hands are nervously flapping. Like sometimes things like that, when like I talk with my hands, like I get it. But sometimes if they're so distracting all over, it's a sign of nerves. So in controlling certain types of and ways of your body language and tonality are super important.
Right. Like I know a common one too is like rocking back and forth to like soothe yourself on stage that people often do naturally. Yeah, for me, I'm always like hands all over the place. So it helps me to have like a clicker in my hand or something like that to like calm myself. But that makes sense. Another thing that I've found that maybe expresses some level of confidence is I feel like newer presenters often end up speeding a lot of stuff up. And they're just like, especially when you only have a limited amount of time to pitch and you have to get so much in, you're just like rapid fire. You're just kind of go. And then like when there's no pauses in between sentences or no, like you said, emphasis on words or anything like that, it can all just stream together and be hard to follow. So one of the things I've been trying to practice to do is find the right moments to take a pause and let the message sink in and then start again. Because if you create that little clear space around something you want to emphasize, it's super powerful. And then it just reminds you to go a little bit slower and be a little bit more confident with your delivery. Plus, if you try to communicate everything, you communicate nothing. So trying to pack everything into that short speech anyways doesn't make sense. Like save some of that for the Q&A, right?
Totally.
Cool. Okay. So great tips there. And obviously people can learn more by joining your program. But since this podcast is focused on Better for the World brands, I'm curious if you have any tips on where founders should weave their impact or mission into the pitch.
I think it's part of someone's why and story, honestly. And if it's also part of your solution and the way a founder gives back. And then if it's part of your financials, if you're giving back a portion, if you are doing something in terms of, we have a founder who utilizes fabrics from that are left over, and she partnered with Burberry and other brands to reduce waste. So that's literally part of her whole business model, is utilizing that. So there's a lot of different areas, but I would say the top three are either tied in with your story, solution, or your financials.
Yeah, those are good tips. And do you feel like, is this becoming something that more investors are specifically looking for, considering consumer trends are going towards wanting to buy things that are more sustainable, socially responsible, healthier, et cetera? Is that something that's on investors' minds and maybe comes up during Q&A or anything? Or are they mostly focused on the finances and, you know, feasibility?
Yeah, I mean, so at the end of the day, investors they're not donating to a cause. They make their money on a liquidity event and want the founder to 10x or more what they put in. So it's something that the founder has to think about. Yeah, you want an impact investor, but the impact investor also needs and wants to make money. So it's definitely on some funds' minds and is maybe part of a thesis, but it's not going to be probably the number one reason, because if a founder isn't profitable or able to have an educated conversation about their numbers, not much is going to happen there at the end of the day. But it's definitely become important. There are specific funds that are for impact investing or certain things like that. But you have to be worried about your bottom line at the end of the day, too.
Yeah. So maybe it's like mostly about making sure it's clear that you have a sound business model or idea or whatever path forward, and impact woven into like a compelling story that makes it obvious why there's a bigger or greater need out there, but then also why you specifically should be the one to build this business. So maybe like keeping that focus there and then letting the rest of the impact maybe come out in, like you said, financials or just keep it for the consumer storytelling. Cool. Okay. What are some of the biggest mistakes you see founders new to pitching make?
We're going to be here all night. Oh gosh, where do I start? It's funny because I've helped companies who are doing over $3 million a year in revenue or in 30,000 doors or have X amount of partnerships, so they're raising $8 million or $500,000, they still make these same mistakes. So I think there's a lot of foundational issues across the board. But one of the biggest ones, and I kind of mentioned this earlier, is that founders thinking that their audience is a target consumer. Doesn't matter who, you should be able to explain what you do, who you are, and what you need to anyone. That it's not an excuse. I don't care what kind of industry you're in, or you think you can't share something under 10 slides. That's just not realistic, and it's a poor excuse. So I think positioning support is definitely something that founders have to focus on. A second one is using cliches and buzzwords. I hear so many founders, and I get pitched in my LinkedIn DMs all day long about people who have a billion-dollar idea. They're best in class. There's no one like us. I hear that all day long. We're revolutionary. We're changing the world. We're on a mission. Poke my eyes out. I hear that all day long. It doesn't mean anything about the founder or business of what I just said, or using opinion language, I feel, I think, I believe. If you're raising money, if you're super early, I don't actually know, no investor cares about what you think, feel, or believe, or what your opinion is. It's subjective. It doesn't mean anything. It's not going to make them any money. You have to use facts and stats to put yourself ahead, because that buzzword language is too far. It's way too common.
Yeah. And the opinion language, I think, I feel, I believe, could also make it seem like you are too close to the idea and you haven't like done the research to validate stuff, right? Because if your best argument's like, well, I think there's a big audience for this, or I believe people really care about this, it's like, well, why don't you go double check that before you ask for millions of dollars to put into this company? Because we can't invest in just your individual need for this. So that makes sense. Lots of good stuff there. I know you've talked about this program already. Can you explain a little bit more about the Power to Pitch program and how it works?
Yeah, so our core fundraising program is for founders raising between $500,000 and $3 million. They can be pre-revenue, but they have to have some sort of validated MVP, email list of customers, letters of intent, or proof that people are really liking the idea, or proof of concept in some way. And we help them curate two pitch formats, a deck, one pager. We go through potential Q&A. But that whole end goal is that we'll directly introduce them to investors in their industry. The founder, we heavily vet for this program's application only, because we are with founders until the last check of this current round comes in. So we become their entire support system. We don't take equity and kick them out after 6 weeks and say good luck. We know that there's different conversations and struggles between a first, middle, and last check. So we make sure that we're fully supporting them. And then we just launched a program that helps founders who maybe not VC backable or investor ready start securing grants and non-dilutive capital. It's a great way to get started. It's a more affordable program and it's not an application. So we share over 200 plus, 1 to 200 new grants every single month, and we teach them how to go for it. Structure, cadence, how to position the pitch, everything in between. And it's become a really, really great way for early stage founders to learn how to secure grants anywhere from $500 to over $200,000 opportunities that we list.
Nice. That's amazing. And I think grants are something you shouldn't sleep on too, because with grants, it's money you don't have to pay back. So get that money and put it to work.
I won 6 figures worth.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, I had 6 figures I did not have to pay back for my first company.
Yeah. It's so helpful. Like there's lots of grant opportunities out there. You probably have a much better list than I do, but I've heard of food brands that have some sort of agricultural base, for example. There are like decent sized government grants. Like I know one client of mine won like a $500,000 grant from, I think it was Washington State, because they were exporting agricultural goods and they wanted them to be able to expand that market. So there's fairly decent amount of money out there, like from little stuff for like $5,000 that some nonprofits give out to like help seed some impact ideas to like these giant grants as well. So I think everyone should go out there and look for those opportunities. So I love that you've got that program there for kind of earlier stage companies too. One thing you mentioned was that you kind of stick with them through the last check or to the last check. I've seen lately that like these kind of fundraising rounds are taking longer than normal. So what are you seeing in the market right now? Like if you're with them to the last check, is that 6 months? Is it a year? Is it 3 years? Like what are you seeing on average?
Well, I guess this is really situational. So if a founder is really committed, because fundraising can be a full-time job, we've had founders get checks with us as soon as a few weeks. It's not their entire round. But on average, I feel like a couple of years ago, it was taking on average 3 to 6 months. And I feel like it's closer to 6 to 8 months plus. If a founder is kind of wishy-washy about it, but again, it's a matter of the FOMO you're creating, the relationships you have, how often you're taking calls, what your data room looks like. Have you been responsive with questions and KPIs and things that they need? It's definitely a harder process, and funds are focusing more now on what profitability looks like for companies versus high growth. Because there were, I think I saw this post that 10 unicorns went bankrupt and they raised millions to billions of dollars and had these crazy billion-dollar valuations and totally flopped. So it's just, I don't think it's as realistic anymore for founders to shoot for something like that.
Right. And I think that's an interesting point too, that maybe you coach people through on their pitch, is being realistic with their financials, by which I mean, I have seen over the, there was a handful of years where it was just like, investor money is just being brought in by the dump truck fulls into the CPG space, for example. And they were just investing in growth, even if you didn't have a clear path to profits, like, no worries, we'll just dump a bunch of money into it. We'll figure that out later. But then a lot of those companies never figured it out. There's still some of the like big case studies where people are doing $700 million a year in business, but losing $70 million a year in from their top line. So it's just kind of crazy kind of how far we got with just speculative kind of investing and like, I don't want to miss this opportunity. So we're dumping money into it. But what I've seen lately is that businesses are starting to shift back into trying to make a profitable business earlier on rather than hoping they can become profitable in 10 years once they hit $1 billion valuation or something like that or annual revenue. So are you kind of seeing or guiding people towards like when they're looking at their financials, like really getting clear with that of like how quickly they can be up to profitability and making sure they've got the right margins for their industry and so on and so forth?
Oh yeah, we have the market on a graph that's going to be on their slide and how they talk about it. And we'll challenge them. If it's going to take them longer than we expect or what the industry is looking for, we will challenge them of, you got to fix this. You got to work through some other options. You might not need to purchase office space or things like this. Or have you talked to this kind of manufacturer? Have you talked to this kind of rev share deal with your engineer? You have to get creative in these times because like you're saying, no one wants to go into a company that's going to be profitable in over 10 years.
Oh, that's super helpful. And I know there's so much more value you have to offer. So can you tell everyone where to go to find more info about Power to Pitch?
Yeah, powertopitch.com, powertopitch is where we have both of our programs listed for whether it's fundraising or grant interest. Our whole mission is to help founders get funded faster. And then I share daily pitch tips and founder experiences on my LinkedIn at Kat Weaver, KatWeaver, and our YouTube at Power to Pitch as well.
Nice. I don't think I follow you in multiple places, but I don't know if I've checked out your YouTube, so that's cool to know. Okay, if you don't mind, I'm going to dive into a little rapid round segment where you can give as long of an answer as you'd like, but we'll keep it a little shorter. So who's the best presenter and or best presentation you've ever seen?
Founder pitch-wise or just in general?
In general.
I would say I really look to Simon Sinek in the Start With Why methodology and how the presentation and information are relayed. So that's something definitely that I've read the book, I watched a TED Talk, I'm really deep into that.
Nice. That's a good one. Yeah, actually, when we're doing our brand discovery process, I force people to watch that video too, just to like set a good foundation there. Yeah. Okay, so in terms of building the pitch, PowerPoint, Canva, Google Slides, Keynote, what do you feel like is the best pitch software?
Canva through and through all the way. They also have a super cool founder story, but the templates and everything I think are just way more advanced and user friendly. And I am not a graphic design technical person, but we definitely use Canva on the daily.
Yeah, I feel like that company just kind of blew up out of nowhere because you've got like all these big software companies, Adobe, et cetera, that have been sleeping on certain kind of user features that users want. And then Canva popped up with this, like, just make it super simple and great templates and flexibility to edit and just keep expanding all the features and moving into motion, like videos, presentations, social media, like they do all the things, right? So they kind of, it felt like came out of nowhere and they like blew up in multiple $1 billion valuations and stuff too. So I love that story of just, you know, sometimes we're intimidated to take on an industry where there's some really big companies that are kind of own that space. But this is just a great example of the thought that like there's always another way to kind of approach a market. If you just kind of identify like an unmet need, you can beat these giants at their game if you can move fast and build something better. What's your favorite pitch competition event?
I would say one of my favorites of all times, it was a student pitch competition. I don't know if they still do it. It was called Outdoor Weaver and it was in Utah. We got to go skiing. We got to meet, just some of the coolest mentors. We got these gift bags. It was a great cash pitch opportunity. So I feel like there was so much that came out of that opportunity that I will forever remember it.
That's cool. Maybe our podcast editors might try to track that down and provide a link to it if it's still available. This show is all about better for the world brands and impact-driven leaders. So who's an impact-driven leader you admire and why?
You know, I would say I'm super inspired. One of my mentors, so she's the founder of Goldbug, Catherine Gold. What she has done for expectant mothers, and so she has the largest children accessories and clothes for Target and Walmart and some big brands, and she has literally did a whole funding program for pregnant and expecting mothers. She has a whole give back model. She does a lot for her employees, even though they're a small but mighty team. And she's helped me in so many ways in the early days, but I've been able to stay in touch and continue to see how she gives back. And it's continuously inspired me.
Cool. I hadn't heard of her, that brand, yet. So now I'm going to look it up and maybe we'll get her on the show.
If you walk into a Walmart or Target, you would see her stuff in the baby aisle.
Very cool. Awesome. Okay. So again, this podcast is called Brands for a Better World. So what does better for the world mean to you?
I think especially better for the world is when you have something bigger than yourself, because you know that your impact can create waves and it can be positive or negative. So it's essentially your choice, but you have the opportunity as this powerful, connected human to make an impact and do good and bring light to others who maybe don't have an opportunity or network or don't even see things like that. And I would say that's what sticks out in my mind first.
Love it. And it kind of relates back to power to pitch, right? Like you're helping people bring their businesses to life, their vision to life, helping them secure more funds so that they can grow their business. It's like, that's a nice big purpose, but also, like you said, bringing light to others. Like you've have experience that you can share with them to help them. The last podcast episode where I was just talking to Will Nitz from IQ Bar, and we were talking about his concept that he posted on LinkedIn about upcycling experiences. And it kind of fits in with what you're doing too. It's the idea that like everyone's going to have experiences, but what do you do with those experiences? Do you just use those to benefit your own life? Or do you find a way to package them up and make them accessible and relevant to other people so they can learn from your experiences and get value from it too? And I feel like that's kind of what you're doing with Power to Pitch. So
if I could just add that part of our impact is 1.6% of female founders secured venture capital last year, 0.13% of that went to minority founders, and then it was 0.07% went to Native American founders. So there's a lot that still needs to be done in the industry. And that's become a huge mission of ours, is supporting female and underrepresented founders.
Yeah, I love it. Super important. That's why we're also doing a minority owned series with Naturally Network on the show. And in our impact driven gift guide, we chose to feature women owned certification, the minority owned fellowship with Naturally Network, a whole slew of other impact certifications. But I couldn't agree more. We need to change the way the industry works, because it's almost everything's inherently unfair, but this is just ridiculously unfair the way the systems work in this country, but also globally. So thanks for doing that work. I think that's a good spot to wrap up. So I just want to thank you for coming on the show and sharing some of your knowledge about pitching. And I appreciate you creating this business to help other people learn how to pitch as well, because as we talked about in the beginning, it's just a super powerful tool that will help you in so many parts of your business, whether that's pitching investors, going after grants, you know, getting clear about your brand, bringing on new employees, you know, even figuring out how to communicate to your consumers in a compelling way. It's all kind of tied into like having a really nice, clear and compelling pitch. So I love that you're doing that and helping other people get further faster together.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you having me. I hope it was helpful for at least just one more founder. So it was great being here. Thanks again.
Cool. Thank you. Thanks for listening. To learn more about Kat or her business, visit power2pitch.com or look her up on LinkedIn and YouTube. If you like this show, remember to help us grow by liking, reviewing, and sharing. And if you're new here, don't forget we have over 100 episodes in the archive. Some might be called Evolve CPG, but it's the same show, so dig in for more goodness. If you consider yourself an impact-driven professional, join me over at impactdriven.community, where we're supporting each other's growth as impact leaders.